Your Honor, Your Honors, I've reserved 10 minutes for rebuttal.
Fine.
May it please the court, aloha, Deputy Public Defender Kanale Sadowski, on behalf of Charlie Owens, petitioner, appellate, defendant, for whom a bench warrant was served in 2001 that went unserved without any effort to serve it by the state for a period of 4 years and 8 months. The ICA correctly concluded in this case that State v. Mangiel and State v. Lay articulate the correct application of Rule 9 to the bench warrant at issue in this case, the post-conviction bench warrant. However, the court erred in two ways. First, the ICA misapplied the standard articulated in Lay. Second, the ICA used facts outside the record to justify its misapplication of the law. Going to the first point, the ICA acknowledged that Lay is the applicable law, the applicable case. However, they failed to conduct the due diligence analysis that this court has required. When we're looking at a bench warrant that's gone unserved, we look at the time period from its issuance to when it was served. We analyze that time period. This court has said that there's a number of factors, number of relevant factors. The volume of outstanding bench warrants is a relevant factor in the time it takes to serve the warrant. However, that's not an excuse in and of itself. Another factor, is the defendant amenable or available for service? If the prosecution cannot establish that the defendant's not amenable, then it goes to the real inquiry, the due diligence inquiry of the state. And this court, in numerous decisions, has held that due diligence focuses on what the state has done. We don't have to speculate on all the things they could have done or should have done, but what have they done? In this case, they did nothing for 4 years and 8 months. There was no effort whatsoever. So despite the fact that in Owens, as in Lay, the bench warrant was outstanding for an extended period of time, actually twice the time as in Lay, and despite the fact that Owens, as in Lay, the prosecution did not establish the defendant wasn't amenable to service, and it, as in Owens, as in Lay, despite no due diligence on behalf of the state, no effort whatsoever, the ICA still concluded that it was a period of necessary delay. 4 years and 8 months with no efforts on behalf of the state was a period of necessary delay in serving the bench warrant on the defendant.
Mr. Sadowski, in reference to number two, whether the defendant was amenable for service, did you just state that the prosecution didn't prove that he wasn't amenable to service?
I did, Your Honor.
Now, Mr. Owens was on probation?
That's correct.
And did he report to his probation officer regularly?
Your Honor, we don't have sufficient evidence to determine whether he did or not. We do know that a motion for revocation of his probation was filed.
What was the basis for the revocation of probation?
There were two bases for that revocation. The first was that he had not reported to the probation office on February 21st, 2001, as required by the court. The second was that he had changed his address without notifying his probation officer. Those were the basis of the motion to revoke probation.
Do you think that in and of itself is not adequate for evidence of amenability of service to service?
Your Honor, I don't believe, first of all, that it's relevant. And the reason being, those allegations, and they were allegations at that point in time, and it's important because, the court didn't consider what might or might not have happened on probation in determining whether there was a violation of Rule 9. In addition, it's not relevant because the letter, the basis for those allegations by the probation officer was a letter that was sent to the residence that the probation officer believed Mr. Owens lived at and was returned back to the probation officer without having been delivered. It was returned to sender. That letter was issued before the bench warrant was issued. And so it's not...
That would be the basis for the bench warrant, right?
That would be the basis for the bench warrant. However, in a Rule 9 analysis, we don't look at the period before the bench warrant was issued to determine due diligence. We look at the period after the bench warrant was issued to determine what happened during that period. And I think that's where the trial court went wrong. I think that's where the ICA went wrong. So they're focusing not on the bench warrant, but on the probation. Going to my second point, it's important to carefully review the record in this case. And
Mr. Sadowski.
Yes.
So you're saying that in both Lay and in McGill, the measure of time began with the issuance of the bench warrant.
That's correct.
You counted the time as beginning at that point where some kind of violation resulted in the issuance of a bench warrant, would you ever have any violation in terms of the state serving or not serving?
I don't believe there ever would be a violation. I mean, if you considered that every time there was a motion for revocation of probation, and you decided that any time there was a motion filed and an allegation that the defendant had done something or then you would have to conclude that no motion served post conviction could ever have a violation of Rule 9. I don't know if I answered your question, though.
The ICA said, but for the probation violation, i.e., not notifying the probation office of his address, that the petitioner caused the delay. Yeah. What's your response to that?
My response to that is that, I think if I can go to my second point, I think that is my response. And my response is, it's speculation to conclude that the defendant had caused the delay in the service of his bench warrant based on an alleged violation of the motion to revoke probation. And when we review the record, two things become clear. First thing is that there were two separate hearings conducted on February 20th, 2005 in front of Judge Nagata. And there was a hearing on the defendant's motion to dismiss for violation of Rule 9. There was a hearing on state's motion to revoke probation. Those were two separate hearings. Judge Nagata first heard the motion to dismiss for Rule 9. There were arguments by the parties. There was a finding by the court. And then at that point, they moved to the second hearing, the motion to revoke probation. And the ICA treats those two hearings as one hearing, concluding that information gathered or stipulated to or allegedly happened during the state's motion for probation was relevant to the trial court's consideration in its Rule 9 hearing and in its Rule 9 reasoning. And that's not fair to the court or to the parties to use information that wasn't present before the trial court, that the trial court did not consider in to determine that there was a Rule 9 violation. So it's important that we understand there's two hearings that happened. In addition, In the first hearing on the motion to revoke probation, Judge Nagata, and that's on page 7 of the December 20th, 2005 transcript, he only considered a few facts. First, that the dates were stipulated, okay? That the bench warrant was outstanding for at least 4 years and 8 months. In addition, the court said there's no disagreement that the defendant was present in the jurisdiction. And the state made no attempts were made to serve the motion on the defendant during that period of time. So those were the facts that the court considered in its Rule 9 analysis. It didn't consider whether the defendant had violated the terms and conditions of his probation. Those matters were irrelevant for the reasons I've already elicited, that first of all, those weren't before the court in the Rule 9 hearing. And second of all, even if the court had considered it, it would have been irrelevant because those things that happened with the probation officer happened before the issuance of the bench warrant. Now, what's curious is that the ICA decision says that defendant caused the delay or by violating his probation. First of all, they're speculating as to him violating his probation. Second of all, what they said is by violating terms 3 and 4 of the terms and conditions of his probation. 3 is not even mentioned in the state's motion to revoke probation. 3 alleges that he had left the island of Oahu without telling his probation officer. That was never alleged by the probation officer. Wasn't even relevant to the motion to revoke probation hearing. So the court somehow, either because the defendant was served with the bench warrant on Maui, or because the defendant, after the Rule 9 hearing, had mentioned that he was living at that time on Maui, from either of those two sources, the ICA decided that the petitioner defendant was in violation of the terms and conditions of his probation.
Mr. Sadowski, in lay, the defendant came forward and proved that he was at the same address all along while the bench warrant was outstanding. Is that correct?
I believe that's correct.
In this case, on the motion to dismiss, Mr. Owens had the burden. Is that correct on the motion to dismiss?
On the motion to dismiss, I don't believe Owens had the burden of affirmatively proving he was in one area for a period of time.
The basis to dismiss then?
That the state didn't exercise due diligence.
Okay. Was there evidence in the motion to dismiss that Mr. Owens was at the same address while the bench warrant was outstanding?
There was no evidence that he was at the same address. Okay. However, there was an offer of proof in the defendant's motion to dismiss that he had been in the state of Hawaii. And we believe that's the relevant consideration for the court. Defendant can be served on any island in the state of Hawaii by a bench warrant. In fact, he was served on a different island. If he's in the jurisdiction, that's the relevant consideration for a Rule 9 analysis.
Just as a practical matter, how do you think you find somebody in the state of Hawaii when there's no address and he has moved without telling anybody his address?
Well, as a practical matter, the state has a number of resources at its disposal. They can check records in the jails at OCCC. They can go out to the resident.
Was he at OCCC?
No, I don't believe he was.
He was in Maui, as a matter of fact, right?
At what point in time? At the point in time he was served, yes. And the state has a number of matters at its disposal, and this court has not required the state to use all of those resources in finding someone. what this court has required is that the state show some effort, some reasonable effort. They could have gone to the residence themselves to check, ask someone there who might have known where he was. That would have been a reasonable effort. They could have called on a phone number, maybe looked through the phone directory. They could have made checks at different places. The point being, and I think the relevant consideration in Rule 9 is that Rule 9 codifies inherent constitutional protections. The defendant, even post-conviction, is entitled to a hearing where he can confront witnesses, where he can offer his own testimony. After a long period of time, those rights are severely compromised.
Well, and that's the reason the court didn't really apply Lay or McGill, right? Because it said, well, this rule doesn't apply post-conviction, only pre-conviction.
The trial court?
Yes.
Yes, that's why the trial court. And the trial court...
So the trial court never said, well, there's not a good basis for dismissing the complaint.
The trial court's sole basis for not dismissing the defendant's motion was that the trial court believed that Rule 9 did not apply post-conviction.
The state doesn't make an attempt to serve. Will you ever know if it was the defendant was serviceable during that period?
If they never make an attempt, you won't know. However, they could prove that the defendant wasn't amenable to service, as in some cases the facts have been that the defendant changed his name or used an alias. In that case, the prosecution could use that evidence to show he wasn't amenable to service. But
the cases speak in terms of the defendant or petitioner intentionally avoiding service. Isn't that true?
Yeah, that's true.
Any evidence of that in this record?
And there's no evidence of that in this case.
The court actually found he was within the jurisdiction.
Yeah, he was. The court found that. And basically, that is the finding that brings us to the due diligence analysis. Once the court has found that...
If you recall in Lay, was there a period of time when the defendant wasn't available for service?
Well, the court determined that he was available, I believe. I may be mistaken. But the court didn't really determine. There was an offer of proof on behalf of Lay. He said, I've been registered at immigration. I've had the same address. They have my address over there. That's my offer of proof. And the court said, well, we'll accept that. We'll accept that you've been there. But I don't believe that's something that greatly distinguishes this case. In this case, Owens offered proof that he was in the jurisdiction in Hawaii. Now, if he had left the jurisdiction, if he was in California, of course then the state can't serve him, and that would be a relevant consideration. But if he's been in Hawaii, the state has just as much means to serve him as they would otherwise. And we're not asking that we require the state to find him, just to show efforts. The sheriffs, they have logs. They can say, oh, I went to the address on this date, I talked to such and such. We're asking for some efforts. We're not asking, State v. Lay requires a balancing of interests, one of which interests is the state's interest in prosecution. However, the state still has to make some effort.
Mr. Sadowski, the three factors that you named or listed, the number of warrants, amenability of service, and due diligence, is that a balancing test, or is the state required to show all three?
It's a balancing test, and it's a case-by-case analysis that the trial court has discretion to determine and assess all the factors that are relevant to those matters. Anything that's...
Excuse me, Mr. Sadowski. Well, in every one of these cases, I guess, it's the the reason the warrant is issued is that for some reason the defendant doesn't show up or there's no way to get in touch with him, right? Right?
Exactly, exactly.
So his absence prior to the issuance of the warrant doesn't figure into Rule 9.
Exactly. That's always the case. The defendant has always done something wrong. And it's not that this court is excusing that defendant's conduct, but this court must hold the state accountable, hold the state to a constitutional standard. There's constitutional standards in place, and the state must abide by them. I see that I've taken my time. I would like to reserve my time for rebuttal if there are no other questions. Thank you.
Good morning, Honorable Justice Moon and Justices. I'm Ann Clarkin, representing the state. The state has conceded that Rule 9 applies through application of Hawaii Rule of Penal Procedure 49 and maintains that there is no grave error or obvious inconsistency in the decision of the ICA with respect to the decisions of this honorable court, with respect to its own decisions, and with respect to federal decisions. Rule 9 specifies that a warrant shall issue or be executed without unnecessary delay by the arrest of the defendant. The state contends that petitioner's affirmative conduct in violating his conditions of parole, of probation, led to the issuance of the bench warrant and, in fact, caused the delay in executing the bench warrant. His criminal conduct...
That is to say, Ms. Clarkin, his pre-issuance alleged conduct.
That's correct.
I paraphrase the ICA's holding, curious as to whether you essentially agree, as being but for the defendant's alleged wrongdoing that gave that resulted in the issuance of a bench warrant, the issuance of a bench warrant would not have been necessary, and therefore any delay resulting between the time of the issuance of the warrant and the serving of the warrant is therefore necessary. Is that essentially your take on the ICA's holding?
I think the ICA held that defendant's absence, his violation of probation caused the state to be unable to serve him because any efforts therefore
but
would have been futile.
But for such violations of probation, the person would have been served with a motion for revocation of probation and the bench warrant would not have been necessary. That's what the ICA said.
Yes, Your Honor.
So doesn't that mean that the defendant's pre-issuance wrongdoing or alleged wrongdoing required or resulted in the issuance of a bench warrant? If there had been no wrongdoing, there would have been no issuance of the bench warrant, and therefore any delay was necessary.
The pre-issuance delay caused the delay to be to the issuance of, I mean the execution of the bench warrant to be futile, and therefore the delay was necessary.
What's the evidence of futility?
The evidence of futility was in the state's motion to revoke, to which they attached the probation officer's report. The evidence of futility indicated, and that was in 2001, evidence by affidavit of the probation officer's report stated that the defendant had failed to appear the next day as ordered by the court at the probation office. And there were no subsequent messages from or telephone calls from him, and that the probation officer had tried to contact defendant and sent a letter to the address that the defendant provided there, and that the letter was returned saying no longer at this address. Therefore, the state maintains that such attempt would have been futile.
Ms. Clarkin, can the state never make any attempts to serve any bench warrants, and none of them ever go stale? Well, let me first ask you, is Mr. Sadowski correct that no attempts were made to serve this bench warrant?
Your Honor, Mr. Sadowski is correct, but the reason that no attempts were made to serve the bench warrant is because they understood that petitioner was no longer at the address.
Is this part of the record on appeal that there was a decision on the behalf of the sheriff's department that they would not attempt to serve this because he wasn't at the same address, or it just wasn't, no attempt was made?
It was part of the record on appeal that the address was not a good address and the defendant was no longer at this address. So whether the police made this decision based on that, it's not in the record. But it's reasonable to presume that once they determined that the address was incorrect and was not fruitful to go there either once or twice or for a period of 4 years and 8 months.
So they could have waited 8 years.
I beg your pardon?
They could have waited 8 years on that rationale. The address was no good, so they waited 4 years and 8 months to try to make service.
I'd say that the defendant every day, or the petitioner every day, made the decision not to contact his probation officer. Every day he could have contacted the probation officer. He had a little map and a letter and with the address and the phone number, contact us at. Every day he made that decision. The state gets one shot. They even know the address where the bench...
They do anything to serve this warrant.
They did not, Your Honor, because such an effort would have been futile.
Why would it have been futile? How do you know it would have been futile?
Well, the probation officer thought it was futile because he sent a letter.
Did he say in his affidavit it was futile?
He did not.
That's the reason he asked for the warrant, right? Because this defendant didn't show up.
Yes.
Well, that's the reason the warrant was issued.
Yes, because the defendant violated the terms of his probation.
So we're talking about post issuance warrant conduct.
That's correct. And the conduct of the defendant is taken into
Was he intentionally avoiding service of this warrant?
The state believes he was.
Based on what?
Based on the fact that he didn't the day after he was told in court to show up for his intake interview, he did not show up. Based on the fact that he failed to contact his probation officer, and based on the fact...
Anything based on the fact that a warrant was issued?
I'm sorry,
anything based, any fact based on the fact that a warrant was issued?
I'm sorry, I don't understand that question.
Any knowledge on the part of, any evidence of knowledge on the part of this petitioner that he knew a warrant was issued and therefore he was avoiding service?
Actually, Your Honor, I think that there was. I think that the terms and conditions that Mr. Owens signed actually say that if you fail to show up, a bench warrant may be issued or will be issued.
That's boilerplate.
That's right.
With respect to terms and conditions of probation, isn't it? What if Owens had been convicted of felony theft and had been placed on probation and had signed acknowledgement of receipt of the terms and conditions and then didn't report to his probation officer? And the probation officer suspected that he had changed address. I mean, would that justify absolutely no attempt to serve the bench warrant?
Given the scenario that you presented, I believe it wouldn't have, because the probation officer, you know, suspected he may have changed his address, but in this occasion, by service of U.S. mail coming back saying no longer at this address, the probation officer knew he was not.
Let's go with that. He sends a letter to now felon Owens, and the letter's returned. addressee unknown. That in itself would justify no further attempt to serve the bench warrant?
I believe that it was, if it was returned as stated that no longer at this address, that service to that address would have been futile, and so no matter whether he was at theft or domestic violence.
Does it necessarily follow then that any attempt to serve the bench warrant would be futile?
No, Your Honor, not to a different address if they were aware of a different address, only to the address where he was no longer available.
This isn't the first instance of a probationer moving from one address to the other in an unauthorized manner, is it? I mean, is it, to your knowledge, is it standard practice? Is it the custom of the police or the sheriff's department to say, well, he's changed address, there's just nothing we can do?
I really don't know what standard practice for the sheriff or the police department, but I do know that it's required in the conditions of probation that the petitioner or the defendant, if they're going to change address, that they inform their probation officer first.
But if you're going to universalize that as a justification an explanation of reasonable delay, then any pre-issuance wrongdoing would justify no action by way of an attempt to serve a bench warrant.
Only if they were unaware of the defendant's address. So in many cases, many cases, a person is bench warranted because they didn't appear in court, or they're bench warranted because failure on their conditions of probation, but they know where they can be served, and they are served at the address which they provided. And that happens often. As you all are aware, there's a huge volume of, I think, 70,000 outstanding bench warrants at this time.
That wasn't a fact in the record.
That is not a fact. Absolutely, I'm simply stating to you all that the court in Lay took judicial notice of that large amount of outstanding bench warrants. So as a practical matter, it's reasonable to assume that the police department or the sheriffs would go to those addresses those good addresses that they had, or that they believed were still extant, that were still good addresses at which they could serve defendant, as opposed to this case where they, you know, they're aware that the address is no longer a good address.
Mrs. Corrigan, the state waited 4 years and 8 months before apparently it attempted service.
Your Honor, whether it's 4 days and eight
four
hours
years,
or 4 years and 8 months.
What about 8 years? Waiting 8 years, is that okay?
That determination is up to you, Your Honor, respectfully. However,
no, but you're advocating 4 years and 8 months is fine.
I'm advocating where it's the fault, and I'm not the only person advocating. Other states have similar things, where it's the fault of the defendant that the state does not have his correct address, where he attempted to evade by giving the wrong address, where he attempted to evade by not showing the court.
How do you know he attempted to evade? That's warrant.
I beg your pardon?
How do you know he attempted to evade service?
Well, Your Honor, I think it's reasonable to presume he did so when he didn't show up the next day and when his address was an incorrect address.
The next day for his probation appointment.
That's correct.
Not in any indication or any notice that there was a warrant outstanding and he should report because of that warrant.
Other than signing the terms and conditions of his probation, which stated that if he did not appear, a warrant would issue.
Right. So the state took no action for 4 years and 8 months.
The state was unable to take action for that period of time, sir, and at that time...
Why was the state unable to take action?
Well, they didn't have an address for him due to the defendant's conduct.
They couldn't go out to the last address and ask the people there whether they knew where he moved to?
Certainly, they could have done that.
That's what they usually do, don't they?
I don't know what they usually do, but if I may be permitted, I would like to read a short quote to you, if I may be permitted to do this, on what the state of Washington found in State versus Lay referred to this case. Begging your, okay. This is State versus Perry. It's a Washington case on page 622. The law of this state has not yet reached the point where the prosecuting attorney or law enforcement agencies have to physically go out and search the countryside for defendants, excuse me, who have either given the wrong address to the court or have moved from that address without leaving forwarding information. Good faith, diligent efforts to locate the defendant are satisfied by sending a letter to the defendant at his last known address. To require more would involve the court in the never-ending search if they answer the question, how much is enough? That's not the only state, Your Honor. New York has a similar statute. And that State versus Sigismundi, also noted by State versus Lay, the prosecution is required to show due diligence and efforts to execute the bench warrant unless it is shown that the defendant attempted to avoid apprehension or prosecution.
Ms. Clarkin, assume that service of the bench warrant at his old address would be futile.
Yes.
Are you saying the prosecution is not required to do anything?
No, Your Honor. If it comes to the attention of the state, and many of these cases say this, if it comes to the attention of the state where the defendant is, as happened in this case where they finally found him in Maui, then it's their obligation to serve the bench warrant. But if they have...
He gets picked up for something else.
Right.
But so other than that, what about Mr. Sadowski's arguments, the driver's license, voter registration, anything, pick up a phone, look at the phone book? They're not required to, the prosecution's not required to do anything?
Well, I think that the phone book idea, it would be reasonable to assume if he moved, he probably, the phone book is no longer accurate.
The internet? Google? I mean, are you saying that they don't have, the prosecution doesn't have to do anything at all until he pops up of his own wrongdoing?
I'm saying that many other jurisdictions say so. Say that given the volume of cases, where we know where people are, and given the fact that they have no information, I don't believe that the resources of the police are such that they can do that for every single bench warrant or even for this bench warrant. And as a matter of fact, they didn't for 8 years, but they did when they found them. And whether it was in this case, 4.8 years. I believe that
Ms.
in Turkey.
Excuse me, but this bench warrant was marked urgent service needed, wasn't it?
That's correct.
So wouldn't that bring to the attention of the state that the state had to do something immediately or urgently?
Right, and presumably they would have done so if they had had the address. I believe that...
So they waited 4 years and 8 months to serve this urgent warrant.
I believe the characterization is unjust there. I believe that...
So before they made attempts to serve
it? I believe they were unable to serve it because they didn't have
his address.
Did they
make any attempt to serve it?
Not after the letter, no.
By your reasoning, Ms. Clarkin, wasn't the issuance of the bench warrant in the first instance futile?
Well, my reasoning was the attempt to serve a bench warrant
no.
The first thing?
Wasn't the issuance of the bench warrant in the first instance futile?
No, because as what ultimately occurred, they found him in another manner. The Maui police found him there, and then the bench warrant was executed is at the earliest opportune time. I know that it's twice the limit that it was lay, but previously, it's been said that discretionary power must be exercised on a case-by-case basis, not by an inflexible blanket policy of denial. This was said by Justice Okuba in quoting State versus Martin. And I believe that's the case. There shouldn't be a bright line rule.
Counsel, what's the evidence of the process? What's the process of a letter going to an address and then gets sent back, no forwarding address? What does the mail person do to come to that conclusion?
Well, generally, just speaking from my own personal experience.
What's in evidence?
What's in evidence?
Look at the record to determine whether or not this letter that was sent to this address upon being returned, that your reasonable inference, I think, that you argue that this person is no longer there, there is no address for him.
The letter actually said, not deliverable as addressed, unable to forward, return to sender, and written in longhand by the postmaster, one supposes, is no longer at this address.
Yeah, I mean, what efforts do they make in terms of coming to that conclusion that there is no place that this person can be found? He's not at this address. No,
well, if the person, if the defendant or petitioner has not left a forwarding address, generally when you leave someplace, you want your bills to follow you.
Now,
or
how do you know he's just left for the day? In other words, the day that the postman went out there to deliver it to him, he was not there. Or for 2 days, he took off for the weekend. He went to Waikiki and rented a room out there and had a holiday. I mean, don't we have to have something to rely upon to make this determination, come to this conclusion that he's not at this address?
I believe that the U.S. Post Office does. I may be personally unaware to exactly what the process is, but I'm sure that they, and certainly hope that the U.S. Post Office does have some kind of process by that, whether it's an accumulation of mail for months and months, or whether the person is aware or the postmaster has been told by somebody there that the person's no longer there. I believe they have a formal process for determining that the mail is no longer deliverable at this address.
You believe that, but there's nothing in the evidence.
I have no.
Show that.
No, Your Honor.
Thank you.
I believe my time is almost up here, so I'd like to wrap this up. And
Ms. Clark, and may I ask you, according to the criteria in determining whether the amount of time a bench warrant was not served as reasonable, is whether the volume of outstanding warrants is unusually high due to exceptional circumstances. Is there any evidence in the record of that?
Your Honor, there's no evidence in the record of that, no. The volume of bench warrants, aside that in State v. Lay, which is around the same time, 2001, the court took judicial notice that the volume of bench warrants was high. There is no evidence of that in this case. However, the state is relying on the second portion of that test, that the defendant was not reasonably available for service. And that is the reason. We think that it would be bad policy to allow defendant to evade his obligations and send a message that this is fine if you can evade doing your probation by simply moving and waiting it out. Then you don't go to probation. You can leave and, you know, hope the state finds you in 2 years, or hope that state finds you, hope the state doesn't find you in 2 years.
Well, that certainly wouldn't wash if the state made some effort to serve the bench warrant to no avail.
Again, but then we disagree on, Your Honor, on what would be a futile effort or not. The state maintains that this was a futile effort, and indeed, defendant's petitioner's presence in Maui.
Is there a futility exception to the criteria set out in Lay?
Well, the state v. Lay did quote or note other states in which there was, Your Honor, and that included. That included Perry, Sigismundi, Austin, and and Durkee. Oh, no, not Durkee.
And in your view, the existence of a returned letter with no longer at this address written on it, which itself was the cause of the issuance of the bench warrant in the first place, constitutes or rises to the level of futility as a matter of law.
I think that that was one of the reasons that caused the bench warrant to issue. The other reasons that caused the bench warrant to issue was the fact that the defendant did not turn up as he agreed to do, and that defendant did not provide the probation officer with his address.
Well, there was a motion to revoke probation after
the
notice of noncompliance letter was returned.
Right. And that was done instantly. The probation officer showed due diligence in getting that letter out. He sent it within a week. It came back. He was sentenced February 21st. The letter came back March 5th, stating that it was no longer deliverable, and the bench warrant issued immediately thereafter. So the state acted with alacrity on those things, but where it couldn't find defendant for 4 years, 8 months.
Well, we're repeating ourselves, but Justice Jacobic did ask earlier how we know that the state couldn't find him. The state made no effort to find him.
And there again is we're going in our circle, because the state maintains that effort would have been futile given the fact that he was ultimately found in Maui and also that the
letter. What we do know is that the state made a conscious decision not to look. We don't know whether the state could have found him.
Well, after the one effort proved futile, the state, I believe it was reasonable to presume.
What post-issuance effort are you referring to?
I'm referring to the fact that the address given by defendant was no longer a valid address.
That wasn't post-issuance, was it?
That was pre-issuance.
So as a matter of law, futility, the judge can just sort of wait around until such time as the defendant trips over someone.
Well, Your Honor, in cases where it was the defendant's affirmative and criminal conduct that caused the unnecessary delay, I believe that they can do what they can, which is a bench warrant the defendant when he shows up. Until then, if without any kind of knowledge as to his whereabouts, I don't believe that they can do anything. The state also has, I don't know quite how many minutes I have left. In State versus Durkee, defendant's conduct, this is in 2006, Your Honor, defendant's affirmative conduct contributed to delay in executing the warrant. Durkee said that if the district court was required to dismiss the charges against Durkee based on Rule 9, under the circumstances of the case, similar to this, it would encourage others to engage in similar evasive conduct, which would be detrimental to the orderly function of the court system. There are, in the balancing test, the state's interest versus fundamental fairness in the orderly functioning of the court system. The state obviously has an interest in punishing criminal conduct and to enable petitioner to rehabilitate. That's their interest. Fundamental fairness to the plaintiff was brought out by Mr. Connelly, who said that 4 years and 8 months is an awful long time and defendant no longer has resources, but it was defendant himself who created the delay. At any time during this 4.8 years, he could have contacted his probation officer and dealt with the matter. He did not do so, and I believe it is unfair to let him profit from his malfeasance. The order function of the court system demands that you have a process to handle these. And then Lay and McGill, both made the defendant's conduct at issue, and both said in these cases there was no evidence that the defendant attempted to avoid service. I believe in this case there was such evidence, and I believe therefore this is the case that proves, that would prove that malfeasance by the petitioner is a reason to extend this time period. And that's it for the state, Your Honors.
Just a few matters I'd like to address, Your Honors. The state's argument that it would have been futile for the state to even attempt to serve the defendant does not fit under the lay analysis, and it doesn't fit under the Constitution either. Whether it's convenient or not is not at issue. It's whether the Constitution does not operate at our convenience. In a motion to suppress, if there's not a warrant, or if there's not probable cause or reasonable suspicion, the evidence is out, whether that's convenient to the state or not. If they haven't gone through the process of at least making reasonable efforts in a Rule 9 case, then the constitutional protections that Rule 9 embodies are violated. And the only remedy is to dismiss the case. As far as the ICA's policy argument, the but-for argument that, you know, defendant would have been served but for the violations of the terms and conditions of his probation, that also falls without outside of the Constitution. It basically says anytime you issue a bench warrant on a motion to revoke probation, we're going to find that time is excluded. And as Justice Okobo pointed out, it doesn't matter if it's 4 years or 8 years. It doesn't matter if it's 50 years. Under that analysis, if there's an allegation of a motion or that a term and condition of probation has been violated, then that it's indefinite, the number of years, the amount of time that the bench warrant has to be served on.
Doesn't it depend on what term and condition of probation that the probationer violated? It's not on any term and condition of probation. It's just, in this particular case, it was failure to report to his probation officer and not informing the probation officer of his address. Suppose he had a dirty urine test. That wouldn't necessarily excuse it, would it?
That's correct, Your Honor. However, like we've stated, we don't believe that, you know, it's really relevant. And in addition, I'd like to add that the ICA's analysis, that defendant, they concluded that because he was in violation of terms 3 and 4 of his probation, that he had left the island of Oahu, that he changed his address without telling his PO, somehow that was the basis for the court's holding. That does not give any future court much guidance. The policy, of course, a future court could conclude, if it's an MRP, if it's post-conviction, we're just going to say that state doesn't have to do due diligence. But state v. Lay, as articulated by this court, requires a balancing of interests. Under the state's proposition, they would indefinitely extend the time that a bench warrant can be outstanding. There's no balancing there. It's just the state's interest. Mr. Owens could have entered college and graduated in 4 years and 8 months. He could have completely turned his life around. He could have become the most honorable citizen in the state of Hawaii in that period of time. And part of the due process protections that defendants are entitled to shows that if the state's going to wait that long for someone to go through that many years and then just bring it down on their heads, that violates the due process protections. And not only does it violate the defendant's due process rights, it also impinges the orderly functioning of the courts, having things hanging out there indefinitely, it also, it's just unfair and it's not reasonable. As far as the other cases that the state has cited to in other jurisdictions, not all of those jurisdictions have a Rule 9 that embodies due process protections, that requires service without a necessary delay. This state, the state of Hawaii, is the state to look to. Lay is the case to look to. Lay adequately balances the interests. Other states might not do so. One of the cases that state referenced, Sigismundi, the facts in that case were distinguishable as well. Defendant had an alias. That was enough evidence for the court to infer that he had been avoiding service or avoiding detection by using a different name. In this case, we don't have any of that. If the state had made some effort, some reasonable effort, as this court has required in due diligence, then we would know. We would know what, whether, or at least the court could infer. The court could infer whether the defendant was avoiding service or whether the attempts were reasonable if unsuccessful. Your Honors, we're asking this court to uphold the constitutional rights inherent in Rule 9, to follow this court's decisions in Lay and the due diligence standard that has been set forth by this court, to find that there has been a violation, there has been unnecessary delay in this case, and that the defendant's motion should be granted, the case should be dismissed with prejudice. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The matter will be taken under advisement.